throw it. And this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. No Andy this week, unfortunately. He's taken a short break and tasting wine in Bordeaux and celebrating a birthday. But joined as ever by Lee. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, doing well. What I'm hearing here is you are the backup. We're sending the backup on the pod as well. We're just mirroring the Dolphins in real life.
Yeah, I'm the Jacoby Brissett of the pod.
You're the Jacoby to Andy's tour.
Yeah. Also delighted to welcome back to the show Mr. Finn Maniacs himself, Jason Sarni. Welcome back, Jason. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. Sir? Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. Hope all is well out there.
Yeah, all good. Thanks. All good. So we're going to talk about the Bills game, obviously, and also the Raiders game. But just want to kick off the show tonight with a bit of news that's broken today with regards to Tua being ruled out for the game against the Raiders on Sunday. Just wanted to get your input, guys. Start with you, Jason. What's the impact of Tua missing this particular game this weekend?
You know, he's got the fractured rib. I know it initially came out that people said it was bruised or that the x-rays were negative, but it is in fact a fracture. So I think that they're doing the right thing by dictating that he's going to be out. So obviously you got to prepare for the guy who's going to be in there. Obviously that seems to be Jacoby Brissett. Now this also probably means that we're going to see Reed Sinnott dress. So, you know, you want to see a potentially franchise quarterback out with injury week three of a promising or hopeful promising season? You don't want to see that, but I do think that it's a decent move from a long-term not playing him. You got to get him healthy. If Derek Carr doesn't play, then this makes it a very interesting toss-up game. If Derek Carr was 1,000% healthy, I still think that they're making the right call and sitting to it. So it will be interesting. It might be ugly, but they got to think a little bit of a long-term plan here.
Yeah, I mean, we'll certainly touch on the Raiders game, do a preview of that later in the show. But Lee, Will Fuller is also due to, or has returned to the team now and has resumed practice. Do you think he's going to make a difference to the game on Sunday, or what's the impact of Will Fuller returning to the team in general, do you think?
I mean, for $10 million for one season, I hope he makes an impact. I hope he's obviously over whatever was causing him to spend time away from the team. I think the other thing is, I know I bang about this every single week, but we've seen it in the last couple of days with Will Fuller returning and with the Tua injury. No one knows anything going on inside that building. When it came out that they were bruised ribs, everyone rejoiced. No one even took into account the fact that he said they were still doing testing. It was just that was gospel. That's what it is. As soon as the Fuller news come out, because Brian Flores wouldn't commit to him being back at a certain time, which Flores is never going to do. Brian Flores is about as fluffy as it comes when it comes to anything. Everyone is day-to-day. Let's be honest, we're all day-to-day that we might be on next week's pod by Brian Flores' count. You know, it's just the way he is. But the reporters take that all of a sudden he may miss the whole season because he refuses to answer that question. Not because he said he might miss a season, because he doesn't want to answer that question, which you knew before you asked about it anyway. You're almost dictating the answer before you're asking the question. So I think this is just another prime example of that, with kind of almost a surprise return of Will Fuller, and the surprise the tour is worse than we thought after the game, but probably as bad as most people thought when it happened.
Yeah, to a lesser extent, we've got injuries to Jakeem Grant and Jesse Davis. Is that going to make a significant difference? Obviously, we know the mess the O-line is in, Jason. But what about those two in terms of being available or not for the game?
I mean, I hate being, harsh, but I think it's a next man up situation. I don't think that either of those individuals play particularly well. So, on the offensive line, I really want to see Liam Eichenberg step up. I want to see you need to see five people join the unit and make it a solidified unit. But Jesse Davis, you say he's a leader, which he is. He's an NFL veteran. He's a team guy. But I mean, we got to call it like we see it. You know, us Dolphin fans, we can love a lot of guys. We can get on their team, get on their side, and that's all well and good. But there are limitations. And I love the fact that Jesse Davis is a flexible guy. He can play all five positions or four positions minus the center. I think this mindset of positionless football and the flexibility is kind of wearing out. I think this team needs, all right, played left tackle since Pee Wee football, All-American in college at left tackle. Let's get someone like that to play left tackle for us for 10 years. That's what we need.
Yeah, we'll move on to the sort of corrective actions that we think the Dolphins need to implement, not just for the game this weekend, but going forwards. But with regards to the Bills game itself, there are plenty of podcasts out there, yourself included, Jason, and lots of narrative out there that have analysed this game to death. And we know the team played badly, so that's not something necessarily we want to dwell on today. Breaking on today's news. Show. Yeah, Andy did put a tweet out there to the listeners to ask for their feedback and what were their takeaways. And Colin Cassell at Cass Cole came in and said, I really wish the lazy media would just stop trying to make anything bad to his fault. His record for a rookie is excellent. He's improving. I'm sick of the lazy Miami journalists. And in brackets, you guys are great, of course. So thanks very much for that, Colin. But Jason, just wondered what your thoughts were to Colin's reaction with regards to the weekend performance.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, the performance was bad. In terms of what his comments were about, you know, how sometimes journalists like to speculate or make mountains out of molehills, whatever. That is their job. They got to put stuff out there. But, you know, Lee, you alluded to it, and, you know, this new Dolphins communication regime, it's Fort Knox. So, and this is not a knock on journalists, because I'm a faux journalist. Like, I have no, you know, I'm a social media guy. I don't have a journalist degree, or I'm not accredited with a newspaper or whatever. I just like to do things on what I see, what I may hear. But sometimes editors might have to say, all right, you got to get a take. You got to do this. You got to give me this. You got to say this. So not saying that they're fabricating or they're speculating, they are speculating, but sometimes you just got to go with what you got, you know, and there could be sources that might say, yeah, he's okay. But that might not be accurate now, because there's a chain of command that seems to be not broken in Miami, but altered. You know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, people were talking in the cafeteria saying, yeah, you hear what happened with the medicals. And people are going to use their cell phones and tell their people when they work for the team and want to sound educated. Yeah, you know what? Quarterback's got a fractured rib, or he's going to be okay. Wink, wink. But that's not happening anymore. There is a literal sergeant at arms in Ann Nolan who is not allowing this to happen. I need people to understand that until it comes out by NFL Network or Barry Jackson, or Barry Jackson is a monster, by the way. What Barry Jackson puts out, I don't have many indication tweets or notification tweets. So I got Adam Schefter, I got the Miami Dolphins, I got Barry Jackson. So when those things happen, it's gospel. When people like me say something speculative, you got to pick and choose who you might want to go with, you know? But for me, you got to listen to those or watch for those top 3 or 4 sources, because when the Dolphins put something out, it's for real, but they're not going to put it out always, and people are not going to guess all the time. The Will Fuller, he's going to be okay. He was not going to retire. But what's going on in Will Fuller's head and family, we have no clue about, nor should we.
Correct. I mean, notice you don't have Omar's notifications enabled, Jason.
I like Omar's, you know, I'll tell you what about Omar. Yeah, a lot of people give Omar a bad rap. I'm not saying he's clean for not allowing that bad rap. Omar's got, he's a columnist. That's another thing that I want to kind of paint out. Yeah, he's a good columnist. He's a good writer, but he's paid for his opinions. Good, bad, ugly. That's what he's paid to write. Barry Jackson, Joe Shad, Adam Beasley. These are guys who are paid to write facts from what they report on. That's a beat writer. Omar, I'm not saying, is not a beat writer, but he's a beat columnist.
Yeah, I've met Omar.
Part of the job is to get interaction. It is part of the job. I'm not saying anyone's making stuff up or anything like that, but part of it is to push the buttons of people who are going to interact, because we know from making podcasts or from creating content, as you do, Jason, that your only measurement of success is numbers. That's all there is. So if the team aren't going to give you anything, there has to be some jumps in logic. There has to be opinion. You know, we give opinion. It's not fact. We're not saying we know what it is. We're saying this is what we've seen. This is what we think. It doesn't make us any more right than anybody else. We're just at times silly enough to jump on a microphone and say it out loud. So it's, you know, but it, you know, when no information is released by an organization, people have jobs to do. They have to make, they have to connect the dots the best they can. Is it always going to be right? Certainly not, because you don't have enough information to connect them, you know? So,
yeah. Lee, Jason, James Vernon at Vernon Minturn came to us on Twitter and said, there were so many takeaways. O-line was horrific, but how did we manage to almost be in the game at halftime despite being so horrific? And should Tua sit this weekend if he wants to play? Well, obviously the latter part of that question has been answered, but Lee, what do you think around his other point around still being in the game at halftime?
I mean, I want to be careful how I word it, but the reason we were still in the game is there was a large portion after the two Bills touchdowns and before the back end of the middle of the third quarter, the Dolphins played fairly decent football on both sides of the ball. They were able to put the ball in scoring positions on offense, and they were able to stop the Bills on defense, clamp them down completely. What broke their back was after halftime, when the adjustments hadn't worked, when whatever they were trying differently hadn't made a difference, the Bills score. Then the offense comes out and they get stopped on a fourth down again. And you could feel the air get sucked out of the stadium. You could see the defense walk out on the field, and it was that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And that's when the points got put back up. I actually think when you break this down into a performance, there was large sections where the O-line wasn't the only problem. There was a big portion of the game in the middle there where they actually gave Brissett quite a bit of time. There was some plays where he was just standing there and no one was getting open, you know? So it wasn't all as disastrous as people want to jump on. But I think there is this, there's this kind of feeling of momentum, which is not really quantifiable by anybody. And it affects players and coaches and fans all the same. And you saw the Dolphins almost playing like they were way further behind than they were for that whole middle portion of the game. You know, had you put a couple of Jason Sanders field goals on the board, all of a sudden it's a one-score game at halftime. You know, you weren't relying on Jakeem to make, you know, to make a fourth down catch and break a tackle, because anyone that was going to make a catch on that play was going to have to break a tackle. And the two options that were playing under the sticks were Grant and Albert Wilson, who'd already had a couple of drops on the day. Like, you know, if you go with a reliable Jason Sanders, granted he may have missed, but let's assume that he puts them through as usual. You know, all of a sudden you're looking at a one score game. It's very different, but I think you get this feeling that it was so easy for the Bills the first two scores that you feel way further behind than you are, and of course it's compounded when the offense is the offensive line is playing bad and your quarterback's getting hit. Like Tua was hurt before the hit that finally hurt him completely. You know, he struggled to get up multiple times. And we actually saw it with Jacoby Brissett as well. Jacoby Brissett was playing hurt. That, you know, you can't keep taking those hits. So how were we in the game? Because the team actually played a good chunk of the first half. Well, after the disastrous start, they found a way to stem the bleeding, if nothing else. They found a way to keep it close. But say, I think this, you know, there is a momentum factor that you kind of feel like you're under an avalanche, and it kind of plays out that way.
That kind of leads me nicely onto the main topic of conversation, really, in terms of, yes, we know that, as I said earlier, the team played bad, and for the majority of the game, especially offensively, what corrective actions, Jason, do you think they need to implement? Now, bearing in mind the defense played relatively well, they shut Josh Allen down to his lowest yardage output against the Dolphins, I think. So he was relatively contained, all things considered. Now, obviously, it was that early run for a touchdown, but most of the game, they seemed to contain him quite well. So surely most of the corrective actions would be on offense, Jason. Where do you think the Dolphins go from here?
The obvious And the captain obvious kind of answer is the offensive line. So I'm not going to waste time on that because we all know that. My six-year-old son, who does not watch football, told me this morning, Dad, the offensive line was garbage. So what we want to do is get more creative play call. And this whole co-coordinator stuff, I'm not anti the co-coordinator. I'm anti vanilla bland play calling because regardless of the regime and coaching staff, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, maybe 15 years, there's not been consistent quality play calling. They've been boring. I want to see a first down, first play of the game, a bit more creative than putting Tua in a situation. Look, run the ball. What is the best way to not have your quarterback get sacked at home the very first play? Run the darn ball 4 yards up the middle. I mean, that's right. If you're going to throw the ball first play of the game, miss deep. Take a quick hike, two-step drop back, throw the ball to a burner. If he gets it, great. If he does not get it, it falls out of bounds. At least that makes the defensive coordinator say, uh-oh, didn't expect that. But then what happened yesterday in the first series dictated the whole game to me, and I hate being that guy if Tua was in there, we still would have seen probably bland vanilla play call. And yeah, that's my problem.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but watching the game, the RPO game is supposed to be a strength of the offense in terms of having it designed for our specific players. But I don't recall seeing much of that. Even obviously, we didn't get to see it when Tua was in the game, but when Jacoby Brissett came in the game, I still don't recall seeing too much of it. So surely, if they've designed an offense to suit that those type of plays, surely they need to introduce that a bit more as well, don't they?
I'll tell you exactly what I'll compare the RPO to. You play poker, guys?
No, I don't. I've done.
If there was a guy who was playing in your poker game that always bluffed, never had a good hand, that's what the Dolphins are doing with their RPO. The run-pass option is not an option. If you're going to run it, great. We're going to stop you because you don't have a run game. So if you're going to have to pass it, we're going to have to make you pass it, especially with Jacoby Brissett in, a backup quarterback. So there's no bluff. They're telling this RPO, it's a non-effective situation without a running game. If you have Derrick Henry, yeah, that'll be good because the whole line will go towards Derrick Henry to stop him before they realize that he doesn't have the ball in his chest. So, again, it goes to the play calling and using your strengths a little bit better. The Dolphins do not have a power rushing attack. Nothing even close. And Malcolm Brown's not that guy.
So where do the strengths lie then in terms of this
offense? Speed and creativity. I want to see play calling. I'm not saying wildcat up the wazoo. I'm not saying reverses and jet sweeps. But sometimes we all could see these third down bubble screens, these third down little short runs, these kind of creative little linemen switching over blocking schemes. But it's not working consistently. So they got to get – give me a flea flicker. Give me something out of the box.
Is Jacoby Brissett the man lead to take advantage of the speed we've got, particularly at the wide receiver position?
He has to be. Quite simply, he has to be. And if he isn't, he shouldn't have been signed as the backup quarterback. We said it in the offseason. You have to have a backup quarterback that matches schemes of your starter. Otherwise, you're hit with a double whammy. You've not only lost the starting quarterback, but you now have to change the offense as well. Slightly in Jacoby Brissett's defense, possibly. If they don't block better than they started the game on Sunday, it really doesn't matter what they run. Because, we've all seen the replays where there's people not blocking anybody. Like, they're not even laying a hand on somebody. Like, as someone who's never played the game, hit the guy in front of you is at least something. At least stop him running free. Like five traffic cones, at least you have to run around the traffic cone. We have players moving out the way. That's a bad thing. I had a conversation with you, Simon, yesterday saying I don't want to go down the O-line is bad. It is bad, clearly. But I think there's another problem that I want to bring up is I know everyone's desperate to bench Jackson and Davis, and everyone wants Liam Eikenberg to play, but I want him to play on the right because I want him protecting Tua's blind side because it's from his blind side that he got hurt. He had no chance to see it. even if he's getting hit from the other side, at least he has a chance to brace for an impact. But right now, you've got a right-handed quarterback. So really, he has to play left tackle because he's potentially the best tackle on the team. So, or at least he's not proven to not be, because that's the stage you're at. You might not be better, but you haven't proven that you're worse. So you get to go in.
That leads me on to a point I was going to make, actually, in terms of corrective actions. Now, it's been bandied about. There are a few free agents out there that we should be looking to at least talk to reinforce that offensive line, because I'm not sure we have the depth. What do you guys think about the free agents that are currently on the market? Should we be looking to pursue them as a short-term fix or even a long-term fix if there's any quality out there? What do you think about that, Jason?
I mean, yeah, you got to look in the NFL. Always due diligence is always being done. There's offices that don't sleep that are scouring through the waiver wires, the free agency list, and practice squads. So, yeah, I really do. I'm even looking on my phone to see if there's any kind of news of signing. I mean, I want something to happen. I want another body to come on in there and you know, have some competition, whether it's trade, free agent, anything. But yeah, they need to have another name come on in through those doors and compete. And the offensive line, that's for sure.
Any recommendations?
I don't have the. I mean, everyone's saying Mitchell Schwartz. I mean, everyone's saying all these. You know, what's going to happen is it's probably going to be a name that no one expects, and everyone's going to create expectations for before they step on the field, and that's a problem. But at this point of the year, I don't know how quality of a guy you could acquire. You know, but maybe it's a guy on the practice squad. Maybe it's a guy who needs another rep. But you got to do something.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've got Greg Little on the bench and you've got another chap, Manx. I can't remember. Is it Greg Manx, I think, or that's on the depth chart as well. Maybe we see them given an opportunity because, let's face it, they couldn't have done any worsely.
No, definitely. I mean, you've got to do it. I mean, my concern right now is right now, as a front office, you're about to get shafted. It doesn't matter what happens. If you're signing a free agent, it's because A, nobody else wants him. They're not out there for no reason. If they are good, you're going to pay over the odds and not get the performance that you're expecting, CJ Cutler. If you go into the trade market, you are going to pay over the odds and get less than what you pay for. That is the nature of, like, everybody knows what position we're in.
Don't believe the Dolphins. Any team would be wise to believe.
Exactly. We would want our office doing the same to anyone else. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we're in a precarious position. I do think we need to also not overreact too much. It was bad. It was as bad as it could possibly be. Do we believe that line is that bad every week? And if so, why wasn't Bill Belichick able to expose it badly the week before? Right? I think it's an accumulation of things where, yes, they all played badly. Everyone was bad. Like, let's be honest, the decision-making was bad from the coaches. You know, it was bad across the board. But either the Patriots are that bad and they couldn't expose those problems with one of the greatest defensive coaches in history, or this was an accumulation with the Bills being better than us, not matching up well with the Bills. And then us playing badly on top. You know, we have plenty of drops from other players as well. Let's be honest, we get a couple of those fourth down conversions, but points on the board, all of a sudden, it's not so bad. We were competing for a lot of the game. Maybe you put the Bills under pressure. They don't put up a bunch of points in the second half. You know, I'm not sure it's as bad as the film. The film obviously doesn't lie. It was that bad on the day. I just don't know if we can overreact and say, well, they're going to be that bad every time they're put on the field. I just don't believe it, because I think we would have seen it before then. We know they're not going to be good, and we know the ball has to come out quick. But what we saw on Sunday was utterly ridiculous. Us three could have played and done just as good a job for the most part.
I think we could probably fill in as offensive linemen, couldn't we? Easily.
Exactly. Or my six-year-old. He knows a bit about the offensive line.
There you go. That's four of us. We just get Andy back and we're starting O-line. So, but you see my point. You know, this week, across the media and across the fan base, it is as bad as it could possibly be. We're the same old We were a 10-win team that give up 56 points to this same team at the end of last year. and we gave up less points playing worse football. Like, we played as bad as it could be, and we gave up less points. Like, I truly don't believe that this means all of a sudden that a lot of the goals we set at the beginning of the season aren't obtainable. Does it mean we don't match up well with the Bills? Hell yeah. They gave us a pasting.
Sorry, go on, Lee.
No, I was just going to say, but let's be honest, there's not a lot you can do about it. We've just discussed that. You now know what you've got to do to fix it. Get on and fix it.
We talked about some adjustments that are potentially should be made on the field. What about off the field, Jason? Do you think some of this blame lies with the frequent turnover of coaching staff, the fact that there doesn't seem to be, on the face of it, any consistency there with who's teaching them and those that are coaching them? That I think they need to step up and do a better job, because clearly, and Austin Jackson is a good case in point here, he's not making the progress that we all thought he would. Where do you sit with that? Do you think that there's too much coaching rotation going on within the team over the last few years, or do you think it's simply a case of the coaches not doing their job properly?
Well, you know, I happen to like the coaches, and I like the coaching staff. I like some of the individuals who are assistant coaches and position coaches. I'm a Flores guy. He has coached 34 games for the Miami Dolphins. So if you hire a guy that you want to be your long-term guy, you can't really look at him until you get to around 50. You know, you got to give him a couple of seasons. And last year, they lost two games to start the year. Then they lost the last game of the year. So in between that season, those rest of the games, they didn't lose back-to-back games. They had three scattered losses. So for the most part, and I'm scratching 2019 because it was a rebuild year, and to win five games was a miracle. Brian Flores, after week two, did a good job of responding after a loss. A little Andy Reid-like, you know? They would come back and they'd beat the pants off of someone. They beat the pants off of the Jaguars, beat the pants off of the San Francisco 49ers, you know. Then they had a couple of nice weeks where they've won some in a row. So I don't think that this is a panic situation. You got to give this young coaching staff, young team, a little bit more. Oh, I'm going to sound like if this was a living tweet, I'd be bashed. I feel like you just got to give a little bit more time and patience, because I still think we're ahead of schedule. People might go crazy hearing that, but we could have very easily been 0-2 this year. Could have very easily had a combined 9 wins from 2 years ago and last year. We're still ahead of schedule.
I mean, it's definitely interesting, like you say, about coming off the back of a loss and the way you respond to that. I actually had a friend of mine, shout out to Jason, he told me yesterday, if you look at the Dolphins' record after beating the Patriots, how bad it is. You know, everyone remembers the Miami Miracle. Does everyone remember the pasting we took in Minnesota the following week? You know, in a critical game, it happens. I'm not saying this is the case, but it's almost as if the Bills winning the AFC East last year is not enough to make them the team to beat. It's still the Patriots. They might be the better team. They might be the team that probably wins the division. But the big fish is the Patriots. And it's almost played out that way. I just wanted to bring that up. I just thought it was an interesting point.
It's a good point.
But I'm with you. I'm a Flores guy. I give him time. This is one defeat. It's just one defeat. I said after week one, winning by 1 point is worth exactly one win, the same amount of wins as it was worth for the Saints, who won by a big margin in week one. Guess what? The same applies this week. It's only worth one loss.
Exactly.
You know how many things have to be tied up for it to go down to points as a tiebreaker? It's not going to happen, right? So let's be honest. It's worth one loss. It's about how the team respond.
Yeah. I mean, we did our season predictions last week, Jason, and I don't know whether you were aware that Lee predicted how many wins, Lee? 13, was it?
13, oh. Yeah. I went for it. I had 12 and then I went 13.
He went for it, he says.
Yeah. And Andy was a...
But I did the same thing last year. I had him at 9 wins on the day we did the podcast. I was like, I know, got to go 10 wins. It's just, I can just see one of those games going the other way.
I had nine last year, and I circled 11 this year. And it's funny because someone actually asked do I bump the win total up to 12 after the win last week? And I kind of said, maybe we're going to hold at 11. I'm going to hold at 11 right now, but I still think that's the number.
Yeah, I was the same as you, predicted 11 wins and a win and a loss to start the first two. So we're on track. We're on plan.
We're okay. Just fix the offensive line and let's get Tua healthy.
Yeah, main thing is get Tua healthy.
Step back from the ledge.
That's it. Long season. Play the long game here. It's not about beating the Raiders just this week. It's about winning the rest of the games the rest of the season. Jacoby Brissett needs to do a game manager type job. Don't need him to win the game. I need him to not lose the game.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I trust this defense to get turnovers to stop other teams. They are that good.
So we know Tua is going to be out this weekend, potentially longer. And we're keeping our fingers crossed that he's going to be back for the London game in week six, I think it is. So let's keep an eye out for that. But you mentioned about how it's how the team rebound from a loss. I mean, we've got the Raiders coming up this weekend, who are 2-0. They're joint top of the AFC West with Denver. They're coming off a 26-17 win at Pittsburgh, which was a really impressive result for them. David Carr has thrown for 382 yards, a few TDs.
Derek has.
Oh, is it Derek? Is it? Sorry. Did I say David?
Yeah.
Sorry. My mistake.
Hey, he's used to playing behind our O line.
Let's call him Carr from now on. He's thrown for 817 yards on the season already, and they rank number one on offense. Headlined by Carr, Waller and Henry Ruggs, who appears to be breaking out. There are a few injury doubts over Carr himself and Josh Jacobs coming into the game, so we wait and see whether they play. Defensively, they rank 16, which is one spot behind the Dolphins, so they're fairly middle of the road there defensively. But in terms of when the Dolphins have got the ball, Jason, offensively, where do you see the keys to the game lying this weekend, bearing in mind the news that we've heard today?
If there's ever a game where you need three running backs to maybe get over 40 yards, this is the game. You know, this is the game when you're not going to have your starter. You need to be creative in the runs, creative in how you put the ball into Gaskin and Ahmed's hands. Ahmed had a couple, had one bad drop, like a bad drop. So execution has to come into play. And Malcolm Brown, you know, he was signed for really one reason, and that's to get 3.5 to 4.5 yards at least per carry to move forward. So I really would like to see that. And I would like to see a big play happen via reverse, via one of those Pat Mahomes to Tariq Hill easiest completions in the business, which is dropping it into the breadbasket of Jalen Waddle coming across. So I want creativity, and the running game needs to be one of those Patriot style, oh my God, which running back is going to do well? Now they're all doing well, and I didn't start any of them on fantasy. One of those weird running back games. That's what the Dolphins need to have to win this game.
Lee, anything to add from that in terms of what Jason said with regards to the running game? Because I had exactly the same point down as well in terms of making sure they run the ball and establish that running game. And I've also, funnily enough, got the word trickery written down because, again, not something that we saw particularly in the Bills game or the Patriots game for that matter. So maybe it's time to introduce a little bit of that just to keep the Raiders off guard and honest, and hopefully that'll open up other aspects of the offense as well, Lee.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Players need to step up. We've had multiple drops over the first 2 weeks by players. We don't expect to drop the ball in important situations. We need players to play the way we don't need them to outperform themselves. Just need them to be themselves. You know, we need Albert Wilson to play like Albert Wilson. Albert Wilson's not known for dropping the ball. Jakeem might be. But Albert Wilson certainly is. And, you know, Jalen Waddle on a punt return, that's not Jalen Waddle. We've seen him catch the ball. We know he's a good special teams guy. Part of the reason he was drafted here. So, you know, it's all that helps. But I think they also need to protect the O-line. You can't put the game on the O-line's back and say, you need to protect and make sure everything works every time, because they clearly are not up to it. So you need to help them with some of those reverses. You need to help them by maybe not calling so many plays where you have guards and tackles switching position. They're not doing it well. So don't do it yet. Like, if you can, like I said earlier, if you can at least slow down the guy in front of you, that is better than not ever touching a person. Like, that's a problem. You know, we saw people passing players off, and and there was no one there. It's just, you know, let's get back to basics. Let's get it working. It doesn't have to be special. It just has to be functional.
Right.
Let's be functional. Let's get the basics right. Then, you know, I expect the defense to play the way the defense does. You know, it's spectacular. Still think Byron Jones is one of the most underrated players in the NFL. You know, commentators seem shocked watching the game on Sunday. So you clearly know nothing about this team if you're surprised that Byron Jones is playing like that. Like, not only is he obviously being paid that way, that's how good he is. People don't really throw at him. You know, I think people are more scared of him than they are of Xavier Howard.
That's why people are throwing.
Exactly. That's why
people yell and say, well, why are they throwing at Xavier Howard? Well, I'm like, well, duh. That's why they signed Byron Jones. Remember, Sertan and Madison, you don't know who to throw to.
That's it. They're more, which is, there's a kind of irony in it. You know, Simon's definitely heard me say this before, but you can get some yards against Xavier Howard. So teams have got to play this game where we say, we need to keep going until he picks it off. But against Byron, he's going to shut you down. And that's a far bigger problem for an offense. I'll give up a turnover if on the other drives I'm getting yards. It's this kind of horrible rock and hard place you're in. You know, because on paper, there is absolutely no reason you should want to attack Xavier Howard over Byron Jones, because Byron doesn't pick the ball. But it's because of some of the yards he will give up between the 20s. We all know that X is deadly in the red zone 99% of the time. How many balls does he come up in the back of the end zone with? You know, that's just something he excels at. But there's a reason they go after him. There's a reason that he's able to have 10 picks in season. Can't hear you, Simon.
Yeah, sorry, on mute.
I do that once a show on my show.
Yeah, we haven't never had a blooper reel before, so maybe we need to start one. I think, yeah.
on my show, I love it.
Yeah, I was going to say we need to see the speed that we've now got. We've got that full speed receiver core all together for the first time with Fuller, with Waddle, with Wilson, supplemented by Parker. I know he's not got the speed, but he's got the big body. Capability, and I like to see them take more opportunities now to get those three in particular out in space to use that speed, because I've not seen that.
One point I want to make on Fuller, and I want to get it in before I forget. Fuller, first game back, obviously what's going on. If Fuller does not have many catches, I don't want anyone to have a problem, because I want to go back and I want to see his routes, because he could be a player to not get a single target but make life extremely easy for everyone else. I mean, I honestly, to tell you the truth, say, hey, Will, first two quarters, you're running 40-yard dashes. That's what you're doing.
Off you go.
Go. And it'll get him his sea legs back, and watch the middle of the field. Watch what happens when the safeties have to account for him.
This is Terrell Owens in the Super Bowl when he played with that broken ankle. You knew he couldn't be effective, but not enough that you couldn't cover the guy. You know, because he's still going to catch the ball. He's still going to make plays, you know, even on one leg. So he has to at least be a decoy.
Right. Yeah, I want to be thinking about, from the Raiders' perspective, pick your poison. You've got all those speed guys in front of you. I want them to not know which one it's going to go to next.
Exactly.
And I'd like to – we haven't had any big plays yet, I believe, this season, have we, in the two games?
Not over 25 yards, I believe.
No, and you'd have thought those speed guys would be able to break out one of those long run catch and runs. I want to start seeing some of that, because today I don't feel as though that opportunity has been there.
Yeah, I think it was like a 36-yard catch, but that was all through the air.
Yeah. Okay. Defensively,
this is actually about the defense. So go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, defensively, what are the keys to the game? We'll start with you, then, Lee, as that's where you were headed anyway.
We need to see something from Jalen Phillips. All training camp, it was partly because he was hurt, and then it was, they're keeping these packages, because they want to send him out against the Patriots when no one knows what's coming. Well, fortunately, we know what's coming right now, and it's not very exciting. You know, the only time we heard him mentioned on Sunday was when they said he was fast whilst getting beat by Josh Allen. Not that getting beat by Josh Allen is necessarily a huge problem, but other than that, was non-existent in the game. And that is the problem. Like, you know, good players will beat good players. You know, we saw that Xavier Howard got beat on a play. Xavier Howard gets a pick. That's good football. We saw it the week before. Albert Wilson runs a great route, gets open. Tua throws good ball. Jalen Mills? Makes a great defensive play.
It was a great play.
Exactly. And it cancels each other out.
That was a great play.
So I'm not picking on him for not being able to tackle Josh Allen when Josh Allen breaks a pocket. That's not it. But we need to see something. Like at the moment, I said a few weeks ago on the podcast, and I know Simon Clancy brought it up, we need to be concerned about how this team has invested its draft picks. Because there is an awful lot not panning out. Like, I said this last week on the podcast, and I say it again, stop being shocked that Noah Igbinoghene is not active. He's not good enough. He's just too good to put on the practice squad because someone else will try and fix him. So you've got no choice but to keep him on the active roster. But he's not, at the moment, if they could, they would IR him because that's the ideal place for him because he's not going to play. He's not good enough. Now, that could be a coaching problem. I think part of it stems from getting him beat too much in his first ever game. I think you probably destroyed his confidence to a level where he's always going to second guess what he's doing. I thought that was bad coaching on the day. I think they know that. I don't think they've redone it since. But yeah, we need to see some of these young guys and, you know, on defense on Sunday, Jalen Phillips needs to make an impact.
Are they scared, Jason, do you think, of the same thing happening to Jalen Phillips again as what happened to Noah in terms, because I've mentioned this on our podcast before as well. I'm all for rookies gaining those reps and gaining that experience. There's no substitute for being on the field on the assumption that they're in the right scenarios and they're getting the right coaching. And Jalen Phillips clearly isn't playing a huge amount of snaps at the moment. Is there any concern there from a coaching perspective? And I think also believe you were at camp as well for a few days. What were your impressions of Phillips when you saw him at camp? Is he just developing still? Is his injury? I know he had a niggling injury at the start of camp. Is that holding him back potentially? What do you think there?
I mean, he's still developing. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, transferred colleges, had a concussion issues, retired, came back to football. He is a massive specimen. I mean, in the flesh, he's huge. It's unbelievable. And he's athletic to boot. He's a hard worker. He was picking the brain of Shaquem Griffin. He was picking the brain of Emmanuel Ogba on drills. He was just learning. He was just learning. And Van Ginkle last year played 48% of the snaps on defense. You know, this is developmental football still. There's no patience across the board anymore. You know, yeah, he's a first round draft pick. Great, but he was a Dolphins second pick. So we could look at it that way. You could look at Noah Igbinoghene as a first round draft pick, but he was the Dolphins third pick. So these are reasons why they're making these picks. But this is not a rebuild anymore. So the two-year, three-year developmental plan for Austin Jackson, youngest guy in the league pretty much, Noah Igbinoghene, youngest guy in the league pretty much, top two, three youngest guys, that's over because they've won 10 games. So it's almost their success is made to the current detriment of drafting these projects. Are they first-round players at the moment because they were drafted there? They're not skilled at that level yet. But this team was basically put together for a 2023-2024 Super Bowl run. Not necessarily this year, but that's what happened when you win 10 games, you get another addition, and you get a good free agent and a draft class on paper. You think 12, Lee, 13 wins. So it's almost like they're getting indicted for their own semi-success before the success happens. So these are, to me, there's mistakes that need to be fixed, but we're still playing with positive integer money here. We're not taking regression yet.
Yeah, remaining on that side of the ball, actually, I was thinking, let's assume Derek Carr is going to play this week. I wouldn't, obviously, I think that's, I can't see him not playing, to be fair.
No. He's going to start the game one way or the other.
Yeah, I think their strength of their team matches up well with the strength of our team, and I'd be happily to match up our secondary with any wide receiver core and fancy our chances. So I think from that perspective, they match up well against the Raiders. The running game is a different question because it depends very much if Josh Jacobs plays. I know Peyton Barber got most of the snaps in his absence last week. We've got Kenyon Drake there, of course, who may have a point to prove against his old team. I feel as though that's going to be perhaps the key to our defensive performance this week is whether they can contain those running backs, and depending on who plays. Jacobs will be a handful if he plays. Peyton Barber, not so much. And then, of course, Drake will be more of a handful out of the backfield, catching those passes from Carl, you would imagine. So for me, the key defensively is to ensure that they contain that running game.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Kenyon Drake is probably as big a deal as anybody else, because he's willing to push the line of scrimmage and then break to the outside. And it's that change of motion. You know, we seem to be okay if people play within the confines of, if you're running straight ahead, you run straight ahead. It's when you sort of go off script that there seems to be a bit of a problem. It does feel like we can be a little bit rigid at times when it comes to player selection and scheme. But, you know, I think Kenyon Drake would be a bit of a concern for this week.
Jason, what are your keys to the game defensively, do you think?
Neutralizing Darren Waller. I mean, that he scares the heck out of me. And then, of course, if you do a decent job over neutralizing Darren Waller, you can't be beat by a 2-catch, 105-yard performance by Henry Ruggs, one of them being a long touchdown. So those are the two guys. I mean, obviously, yeah, those are the two guys to key on. Short-term, Darren Waller, not letting him get first down after first down and yardage after yardage after yardage, and not letting Henry Ruggs beat you on that bullet play where it's just, oh my God, look what just happened, especially to start the game. They got to get back to that average of 6.5 to 3.5 points in the first quarter. Hot starts, getting out to a lead. That's what they did last year, and they got to not have penalties.
Lee, anything to add to that in terms of how the defense should approach the game?
No, sounds perfect. I mean, I think they did a good job last year. I think Darren Waller played well against Eric Rowe, but for the most part, I think we did a pretty good job. You know, I expect this game to probably be close again, like last year's game was.
Yeah, I think the Dolphins can make a little bit of history, actually, by becoming the first team to win twice at Allegiant Stadium. So, Jason, Lee knows. I know I like my stats.
I'm a stat guy. That just made me extremely happy. I love that. If I use it, I'll credit you. I promise you that.
Yeah, thanks for that. But it's not my stat, actually. I read it somewhere else. It might have even been Barry Jackson, I think. But I didn't have it somewhere else. What we normally do on the show, Jason, is give a game ball out for the weekend's games, but I don't feel as though it's appropriate to do that for a performance against the Bills. I don't think anybody deserved a game ball. Otherwise, Lee. Yeah, Lee?
Yeah, I've got one.
Go on.
I got a whole bag full of game balls that should be given out to every fan that sat all the way through it.
There you go. Well said.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, I sat through and watched it to the very end of the game. That's part of being a fan. As great as the wins are, sometimes there's sucky losses as well. I remember being there. Do you remember? Simon will remember this, I'm sure. The Bills actually giving the Dolphins a very similar pasting when Rex Ryan was the coach the week before they travelled to London, when Ryan Tannehill was not named the starter for the London game. And I was actually at that game in Miami, and most of the people had left and it was raining, and I made my wife sit there until the very last player walked off the field at the end of the game. That's just part of it.
Well, you're already there. You might as well.
That's it.
The point I was trying to make, we do that every week, every show, Jason, but what we also do is a game prediction for the upcoming game. So I'll start with you as our guest this week. Give us your prediction for the Raiders game this weekend.
Close. Drama. Not necessarily as high drama as last year's Raider game. I don't think we're going to be seeing a last second situation, but I do think that the Dolphins could win by a possession, maybe, you know, 24-20. I think the defense will be the ones on the field if they win the game, ending a push by the Raiders to win the game. So I think that it would be Derek Carr with having the ball in his hands with a chance to win, but the Dolphins defense clamping down. Maybe it's a turnover, a three and out, you know, getting a fourth down stop or whatever it is, missed field goal. I think the Dolphins defense walks off that field holding in a close game.
Lee, what do you think? I mean,
I agree. It's going to be super close as well. But I'm going to take 31-28. But I think that's with the Raiders coming back at the Dolphins. I don't think that's Dolphins kicking the last second field goal. I agree that I want to see him put up points. I think they're more than capable of it. This is going to sound bad, but this is almost a definition of a trap game for the Raiders. You know, they're 2-0, and let's be honest, probably as many people predicted them to be 2-0 as has predicted us to be 2-0. So, you know, I think they're probably riding high as well, and they think they're getting us off the back of a terrible defeat. And I don't think that's a true reflection of where this team is. Maybe it's not as good as we thought it was, but it's certainly not as bad as it was on Sunday.
Okay. Imagine Dolphins Twitter if Jacoby Brissett leads the team to a win, and everyone's going quarterback controversy, and it's like, no, there isn't. But that's the mindset of Dolphins Twitter, I feel, a lot of the time, isn't it? So we'll wait and see. But my score prediction, I'm going to be like Andy Lee. I'm going to err on the side of caution. And as much as I'd like to think the Dolphins are going to win this game, I'm still not convinced Jacoby Brissett is the ideal backup to lead this team for the next few weeks. And given the start the Raiders have had, they've got the home advantage with a full stadium behind them. I feel as though the Raiders are going to probably edge this one out in a close one, 27-20 to the Raiders, unfortunately. I hope to be proven wrong, of course. I'm doing an Andy this week, as we like to call it. Right, thanks, guys. Sorry, Gonley.
No, I was going to say the same way that I'm going to predict a win every week. Doesn't matter. Yeah. I'll always find a reason why we can win, because it's the optimistic fan in me.
Right, that's the Raiders preview out of the way. One more thing before we call it a day. Lee, you had an idea of a little conversation we ought to have, bearing in mind that Dolphins Twitter seems to be losing their minds at the moment. Go ahead. Do you want to share your idea?
Yeah, I was going to say, so bearing in mind we're burning everything to the ground. If you were to have to choose another team to support in the NFL, what would your criteria be? The Dolphins no longer exist. You have to pick another team. I'm not advocating that people switch allegiance. That is a terrible thing to do. I'm saying if the Dolphins were no longer a team, what would be your criteria? Is it just winning? Or is there more to it?
It's a great question. If I would have to do it, it would have to be one of the top four or five teams, not the New England Patriots with the Lombardi trophies. So it'd have to be a rich history. It would have to be multiple championships, consistency in terms of drafting good players, Packers, Steelers. That's what I'm thinking. But it's a really good question.
That's why I didn't ask for a team. That's why I don't want to put anyone on the spot and make them actually choose another team. But you know, what is the criteria?
Excellence. Yeah. Excellence.
I would look for a well-run organization who's got a good reputation for off the field, a good reputation on the field. Fan base doesn't matter too much because fans come and go and they change allegiances all the time. Good history of drafting, not the team that wants to win free agency all the time. But most of all, I would look for a team who's willing to relocate to London, because I think I'd probably support a London team, if I'm honest.
That's another conversation we need to have at some point. Would you support a London team if a team moved here?
No, I wouldn't actually. I wouldn't. It was a Dolphins through and through. So
yeah.
But needless to say, whatever the criteria is, it wouldn't be the Patriots, it wouldn't be the Bills, and it wouldn't be the Jets, regardless of whether they met that criteria or not. It definitely wouldn't be those three.
I couldn't live that way.
Yeah, no, I couldn't either. No way. Nightmares. Okay. Jason, before we call it a day, thanks once again for coming on the show tonight. It's been a real pleasure having you on. Anything going on in your world at the moment that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Oh, just a lot of stuff over at FinManiacs. And first and foremost, I really appreciate coming on. This is a fun show. You guys are fantastic. And to everyone listening on both sides of the pond, I really appreciate the time. But, you know, we're just doing our business as usual at FinManiacs. We have a lot of shows. We just welcomed two terrific Dolph fans on Twitter last night. Joy and Tara, some of the most passionate fans out there, have their own Ladies Night podcast now, which will be on Tuesday nights, you know, on Periscope, YouTube, all the channels. We'll find a way to disseminate it out there, but they're fantastic. And we got a lot of hardworking young writers and podcasters just covering this team like you guys. So we appreciate everyone's support, and thanks always for having me on, guys.
Pleasure. Welcome. More than welcome anytime. Any final thoughts, Lee?
No. Let's get a win Sunday.
Yep. Let's get a win Sunday.
Let's just put this behind us. Let's get a win.
And we'll have a much more pleasant discussion, I feel, hopefully next week if the Dolphins can somehow pull out a win. But thanks, everyone. Thanks for checking out the pod, and we'll speak to you next week.